Welcome to another episode of the Saxo Market Call podcast. As always, I am your host and my name is Søren Otto. And this is a very special episode, at least for me, because it is the thematic episode we do every week. And this week we are going to try out a new format where we're going to talk to each and every one of the strats that have been writing an article for our quarterly outlook. And we released that a little over a week ago. And I thought it would be a good idea to just have a chat here a bit more than a week after to talk a little bit about the articles and also what's happened since. And the first guest in my studio is the always entertaining, always interesting Peter Garnery, head of equity strategy and also the Saxo Strats. Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Hi, sir. I'm doing great. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. Very excited for this new thing and see if I can figure out how to set it up. But apart from that, I also think that the content here is actually quite interesting, and it is our quarterly outlook, and we will just dive into it because we have a lot to talk about.
Sure.
We just released it last week. I think it was on the 2nd of April. And the quarterly outlook as such is coined or titled The Wasted Year, 2024, The Wasted Year. And could you just, before we dive into your article, could you just give a little bit of an overview of what that title means and what it entails?
I think between the lines, a lot of what's in that title, The Wasted Year, is that it's an election year. So there are a lot of pressure on politicians in many countries. It's the biggest election year in modern history. A lot of pressure to keep status quo and keep things going until we get on the other side. And that's why 2024 most likely will turn out to be that year where we didn't make significant reforms or changes to the economy. And 2025 more likely will be the showdown year where a lot of things will happen and potentially it could collide with a slowdown in the economy when we get to that point. But 2024... It's a wasted year from a politics point of view until we get on the other side of the election. But it's also a year that's very clear now where things are just continuing. The global economy is not slipping into a recession anytime soon.
And obviously, I should say that all of this you can read on both our platform and also our website if you want to dive into all of the articles. We're just going to give you some highlights here. First, as I said, Peter, we're going to talk about your equity article. Then I'm asking you to leave, and then I'll have Ole in here talk about his commodity piece, then Altea, and then finally Charo will talk about FX.
And I'm sure Ole will be so happy because commodities are just flying, as he predicted in the quarterly outlook.
It is. That's going to be a fun one. But before we go into his talk about commodities, your equities piece is titled The AI and Obesity Rally is Defying Gravity. And also, if you go into our website and watch the visual of this quarterly outlook, that's very much what it's showing, that we have these stocks that are so inflated that they basically pull up the entire debt overload that we could argue that there is in the U.S. But could you just give sort of the short overview of why you titled it that and what it's about?
Yeah, so, I mean, stepping back and looking at why didn't we get a recession in 23? The reason why we didn't get a recession, and that's something the Fed has come back to as well, is the fact that the U.S. government, the Biden administration, unleashed an unprecedented amount of fiscal stimulus in an economy that was already going pretty fine, right? So that offset what you would have expected was the big impact from high interest rates. And we have a lot of debt in the world. So your thinking would be that with interest rates going from very low levels to the current levels, that you would see an economy being pressured from this. Also, stocks in general, because the alternative bonds and everything else suddenly becomes a little bit more interesting. But then, you know, you had the AI and you had the obesity drugs, and it just created a phenomenal rally in the two largest sectors of the world, the healthcare sector and the technology sector. And that just pulled the equity market higher and higher and higher against all expectations, and that's why we're saying it's almost defying gravity here. Yep. And as we write in our equity outlook, I mean, especially for the U.S., equity valuations have been pushed back to levels we haven't seen since the bubble year of 2021, and then the bubble year of 2000.
So if we look at it from that point of view, basically what you're saying in this piece is that maybe there's room for, if you say healthcare and technology has been going on for so long, they've performed so well for so long, that maybe it's time to caution a little bit, or at the very least also look at other sectors that may perform. For instance, like the European defense industry, which you also write that you think might be something that could perform in the coming quarter.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why we're playing on the word gravity is because gravity in the physical world, or at least here on Earth, where we have gravity, is a physical concept. So, you know, you can't escape unless you have enormous amount of velocity, right? And I think that the metaphor is pretty well or pretty good for these two as well, that in equity markets, what typically happens is that you have a seismic shift in expectations, which we've seen for obesity drugs and AI. And it carries the equity prices to a level and to a set of expectations that eventually cannot be fulfilled. I think it within the human nature, we tend to over-extrapolate things in the short term. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt that what's happening in the healthcare sector, in biotech, and with everything about related to obesity, but also in the AI. I think when we look back in 10 years, we'll definitely see that this year and this period we're in right now was the emergence of a phenomenal technology vector, and it's beneficial for society. But things will come down. I'm absolutely sure that there will be a big major hiccup in this rally in those two themes. And that's the gravity point. It will come down.
And I guess that's also the sort of points to the time aspect of this. This is a quarterly outlook. So this is what we expect for the next quarter, not for the next 10 years.
Exactly. When we talk about the obesity, we put out in the outlook a positive, both tactically and strategic, view that is positive on healthcare, but we do come out with a negative view on the US technology sector. Whether that will prove to be the correct prediction, I don't know. Well, time will tell. I will think the famous Mark Howard, hedge fund manager, you know, we all just part of a one big guessing game, and we're guessers. We guess about the market, and our guess is that the AI rally will run out of steam at one point. Whether it is in the Q2, time will tell.
And I'm sure that the earnings season will tell us in just a few weeks, just at least give us a good indication.
Yeah.
Peter, that was more or less everything I wanted to talk about. If you're out there as an investor, I guess the takeaway from this article is to be cautious about these areas. Maybe look to Europe, for instance, something like defense, if you feel like that's part of your risk profile.
Yeah, and then maybe look a little bit at the energy and the financial sectors. Those two sectors have been living a little bit in the shadow of this rally in technology and healthcare. But as you can see in the outlook, we do actually have a positive view on those two sectors.
And then I guess the final point is that Japan is also something you're a bit cautious about.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Peter, thank you so much. Now it is time for you to go, and then I will invite Ole in when we're back in a minute. All right, and we are back, and now Peter has left the room, and his chair has been taken over by our all-time great commodity expert, Ole Hansen. Hi, Ole, how are you?
Hi, steady now. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I mean, Peter gave you praise for your take on this quarterly outlook, so we're very excited to talk with you about it. Ole, you've coined it, is the correction over? And maybe we just start there. What do you mean? What correction are you referring to?
Well, it is the correction that we have seen in the commodity space for the past couple of years. I think we all remember that when the pandemic broke out and we were all stuck in our homes, we suddenly went crazy for consumer goods. We had inflation going sharply north. We had commodity prices surging higher. That kind of stabilized around 2022, and then since then we corrected around half of the rally that we saw in the initial 2022 rally. We correct around half of that, and then we spent the last year trading sideways, not really looking for fresh input. But it has also been a year where we've been worried about the global economic outlook, where sharply high interest rates has dampened economic activity. Where the focus has basically been on bringing inflation under control, but also a period where we've seen brewing troubles in China, which is obviously a major producer of commodities. But within the last couple of months, we've really started to see some bids coming back into the market. We did already back in December when we wrote our first quarter outlook. Basically, we coined that the year of the metals, and the metals sector most certainly has played played a significant part so far, with, led by gold, but also some of the industrial metals starting to show some teeth. Energy is on the move. We see some of the food commodities have been crazy. Cocoa is obviously the one that stands out, but also some of the other soft commodities are also being bid at the moment.
Yeah, and as far as I recall, in the year of the metals, you called that gold could go to, I think, was it 2,300 this year, which is already broken. What's your take on gold from here on out for the coming quarter?
Well, gold and silver targets has both been met already, so we're obviously a bit too conservative on that front. But and the funny thing is, or the interesting thing is, the reason why we called these higher prices in gold and silver, none of these has actually come to fruition yet. We have not yet seen a rate cut. We have actually seen rate cut expectation being sharply reduced. We have not seen a weaker dollar. We have not seen lower bond yields, and we have not seen a pickup in ETF demand from investors around the world. But nevertheless, gold has surged higher. Silver has joined the rally recently, not least supported by a recovery in industrial metals as well. So there's obviously other factors at play, and maybe I should just carry on and try to highlight a few of them. Because we all know that for a number of years now, we've seen extremely strong demand from central banks around the world. It really picked up pace with the Russian invasion of or attack on Ukraine a couple of years ago. And it's led to this deglobalization or de-dollarization or the fear factor also impacting how the thinking at central banks. Chinese investors have been rushing into gold, also on a significant high pace. Just recently, there was an ETF in China that was invested in gold-related companies. It had to hold trading because prices were bid up 30% above the actual underlying value of its investments, and it just highlights some of the craze to get involved. On top of that, we have a very strong momentum. It's attracted a lot of speculative demand from hedge funds, and they're obviously not married to position. They will get out if the price suddenly turns south, but for now, there's no reason for them to get out because we have basically rallied to the extent we have. And that basically begs the question, what happens when we actually do start to see rate cuts, or if the rate cuts start to surprise in terms of being more aggressive than what has been priced in? Well, then we see a second leg. So we also in the outlook say, basically saying that from a technical perspective, 2,500 could come into play later in the year.
So obviously, as you say, almost all commodities are on the move right now, energy, food, obviously the metals that you talk about. As we look into this quarter, what will be, obviously you'll cover all of them, but are there any of them you are paying more specific attention to than others?
Well, I think just for now, most certainly the precious metals. Simply, we can just look at our board every day, and I'm sure that's the same thing around trading floors around the world. There's an intense interest in gold, silver. And I think probably also eventually something like platinum, which is record holding, which is at the lowest level relative to gold in history. So I think there could be some relative demand starting to emerge into that metal as well. So that will obviously require an intense amount of attention. But then we have the whole geopolitical risk associated with the energy market, where we have Middle East still brewing. We have attacks on refineries in Russia from Ukraine, which is reducing Russia's ability to produce products. That's also helping to tighten the market. So the energy will also be in focus. And then you mentioned food, so on also, but we probably need to split them into softs and grains, because the grain market is down 10% this year. We still got leftovers from last year's strong production, which has kept prices under control. But we're heading into the Northern Hemisphere planting and growing season, and expecting a normal year in terms of weather, I think is simply something that it's not a luxury we can afford these days with the kind of volatility we have in weather development. So with a record short, almost a record short position being held by speculators in the grain market, it's also one that will receive some attention.
Ole, thank you so much for giving us that brief update on your quarterly outlook, as you obviously also can read, like all of the other articles, both on our platform and the website. Thank you, Ole.
My pleasure.
We will be back in a minute, and that will be with Altea Spinozzi talking about fixed income. All right, we're back with none other than Althea Spinucci, our head of fixed income strategy. Hi, Althea, how are you doing?
Hi, Soren, I'm good. Thank you very much for having me on.
It's always a pleasure. Unfortunately, you couldn't join me in the studio today, but we are still online on the phone. Althea,
absolutely.
We're going to talk about your quarterly outlook piece, and you called it or titled it Keep Calm, Seize the Moment. Could you just lay for us or tell us why you coined it that and what you mean by it?
Well, Soren, with Keep Calm, I mean that right now we see the risks between inflation and growth to be more balanced. The economy is slowing down, inflation is falling. But even though this kind of juncture might be risky for risky assets, so credit bonds and stocks, well, the bond market is offering an opportunity because interest rates are still the highest we have seen in more than 20 years. The yield that sovereigns in both sides of the Atlantic are paying are among the highest we have seen in a decade. And therefore, these securities are offering a compelling buffer against inflation risk, against slowdown of the economic activity, or even a market crash.
Okay, so basically you're saying that no matter whether there's rate cuts coming or not, which is kind of the limbo we're living in right now, there's still a relatively good, at least, future in terms of the next quarter for bonds. Is that correctly understood?
Yeah, well, if we talk about quarterly performance of bonds market, that's really much depends on what we are talking about, whether we are talking on the long part of the yield curve or short part of the yield curve. But what I'm saying is that there are some opportunities out there, for example, sovereign bonds with short maturities that are impossible to skip on because they offer a win-win solution. And I hope to explain that in that conversation and convince you, Soren.
Yeah, definitely. Let's do a longer conversation about that at some other point. And I know you've also touched upon it in your quarterly outlook, so everyone go and have a look about that. But generally, if you should paint the picture for bonds relative to what you wrote, and also the next quarter, I guess what I get out of it is that as you say, sovereign bonds with relatively short maturity is sort of, well, I guess a no-brainer isn't something you can say in the financial market, but it's a very advantageous proposition also relative to, for instance, ultra long or plus 20-year bonds.
Absolutely. So if we look at the first quarter performance for bond market, we see that the sectors that have been outperforming has been the corporate credit sector, in particular junk bonds. And the reason for that is that the economy has remained quite resilient, and therefore investors have continued to basically put money into risky assets. And we saw that quite clearly in the stock market. The underperformers instead have been those bonds with ultra-long maturity. And with ultra-long maturity, I'm talking about anything that has a maturity of more than 20 years. It's true that we have seen some losses also in the 10-year tenors, but that tenor, as I also mentioned in other calls, offers a good risk reward. So the problem with the picture that we saw in the first quarter of the year is that I feel it's going to be unlikely that that present itself again in the second quarter of the year, for the simple reason that the economy is slowing down, interest rates remain the highest that we have seen in modern history. Therefore, it starts to become more challenging for lower-rated corporations to perform in such an environment. So we might start to see some rotation from risk to quality, and that means that corporate bond spreads might start to widen. So the best option for bond markets is to keep invested in safe assets, so sovereign bonds, and try to reduce duration. So I argue in the US for maturities up to 5 years, in Europe up to 10 years, because the macroeconomic conditions are different. Europe is in a stagnating economy compared to what we see in the United States. And by keeping in that part of the yield curve, one is able to park money and wait for better opportunities coming into the future, and also to take advantage of the highest yields that are available out there.
All right, so there you have it. Stick to considering sovereigns, quality, and shorter duration. Thank you so much, Altea, for coming and giving us a highlight of your quarterly outlook piece, and let's have another talk soon.
You are very welcome, Soren. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we will be back with the last participant, who is Charu Chanana from Singapore, who's going to talk about Forex in a minute. All right, we are back. And last but definitely not least, I am now joined by Charu Chanana, all the way from Singapore. Again, obviously and unfortunately not in the studio here with me, but then it's a good thing that tech can help us still talk. Hi, Charu. How are you doing?
Hi, Soren. Very good. And glad that we're getting this quarterly outlook episode out this time.
Definitely. Definitely. Charu, normally when we talk in the podcast, you both cover macro and FX, but this piece is, I would say, mainly at least about FX. So let's stick to that. It's titled "The Rate Cut Race Shifts into High Gear. Sorry about that. And as you told me, it's basically divided into two major themes, and I think we should just go through them one by one. One is about this concept of U.S. exceptionalism, and as you point out, it's set to fade, and although U.S. economic data has been strong basically all of this year, but could you just take us through what you mean by what the take is, and also what you mean by U.S. exceptionalism?
Absolutely. That's a great start, Soren. So I would really want to clarify the two big terms that have often been thrown around in terms of the U.S. activity levels so far this year. One is the U.S. resilience, and certainly that continues. What that means is that economic data out of the U.S. continues to outperform expectations. So whether you look at the activity levels, the ISM manufacturing, the GDP number, of course, one could say it is a little bit backward looking, but I think a whole range of indicators out of the U.S. Have surprised us to the upside. So that's U.S. economic resilience. And certainly, it looks like that continues to be maintained for now, as we have already started the second quarter as well. But the other story around U.S. exceptionalism, that basically refers to the fact that the U.S. economic growth is doing better than everywhere else. So we continue to feel more optimistic about the U.S. economy, and we continue to feel pessimistic about, say, Europe or, China, the other major economies, truly. Now, that is the narrative that I think would potentially start to be questioned in the second quarter, even if that U.S. resilience is maintained, because we are seeing some signs of the manufacturing cycle really bottoming out at this point. We are really seeing some signs of China economic data maybe not looking extremely better, but certainly looking like it has bottomed out somewhere now. And when China and manufacturing cycles start to do better, what also does better in response is the Eurozone, the European economy in general. And then this is also more about what the markets have priced in, right? So if you look at the US dollar story, certainly a lot of that good news is priced in, as we saw with the CPI releases as well yesterday. the Fed rate cuts continue to be pushed out of expectations for 2024. Mm. We are now down to expecting only 2 rate cuts for the Fed this year. So while that could stay, my basic assumption in the second quarter outlook really is that not a lot of bad data is really needed to turn that Fed narrative around. I think the Fed still remains inclined to cut in July, a little bit ahead of that election, U.S. election that we have this year. And not a lot is needed for the dollar trajectory also to turn around because the positioning is stretched long. And we've seen that with NFP data, with CPI data, even though yield gains have been quite massive, the dollar has not responded so aggressively in a positive manner. So I am looking, at least in the second half of this second quarter, I'm looking for that story to turn around, U.S. exceptionalism to be questioned as Europe and China stabilize, and that kind of leading to some kind of weakness in the U.S. dollar.
Yeah, I think it's a very common narrative also, at least when you, with the piece of this podcast that was with Peter about equities, at least the idea of U.S. slowing down is entertained. Charu, but your other point is sort of slightly more technical one about low volatility that could lead into what is referred to as carry trading. Could you just also outline for us what do you mean by that and why is that the case?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Again, but so what I'm defining in this quarterly outlook is about the fact that how this low volatility environment has been fueling carry trades. So carry trades is certainly trend of borrowing a low yielding currency. So something like a Japanese yen or a Swiss franc, for example, and putting that money to work in a high yielding currency. So for example, the US dollar or the Aussie dollar, in fact, nowadays, even the European currency or the sterling as well are high yielding given where their interest rates are. And this carry trading really just works well in a low volatility environment. One of the books that I've read about FX has had a very interesting phase, and you would probably hear that around in the markets a lot, that carry trades go up the escalator, but they go down the elevator. So I think that's something we need to be really cautious about, particularly as, you know, we see these geopolitical tensions are ramping up from here, right? Mm-hmm. And during the course of the second quarter, by the end of the second quarter, we'll be very, very close to that US election as well. These are the kind of things that really spook up volatility. And if we do see that turnaround, if we do see that volatility going higher, like I said, you know, go down the elevator, I think there needs to be some amount of risk management around these carry trading strategies that are really flush right now. So in fact, yes, my narrative here is really about being cognizant of the fact that there could be these volatility spooking risks during this quarter, and potentially just guard against any risks of carry trades being unwound towards the end of this quarter, if at all these risks were to materialize higher from here.
So basically what you're saying is that also with this escalator elevator analogy is that carry trading goes well slowly up, but it goes much faster down, and one of the things that will be able to pull it down is if volatility increases.
Absolutely, that will be the biggest driver here, so we need to be on alert.
It's a good start of the day, explaining some of your content in an appropriate manner. Sometimes I mistake how it is supposed to be understood, but that was a good start. Charu, another thing is that I want to ask you, are there any other effects that you will pay attention to in the quarter? I know you mentioned the yen in here, and obviously also the US dollar. Are there any other places you are looking in the coming quarter?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think a few stories again there that I would want to mention is that as much as, you know, I am starting this whole outlook with a view on the US macro story and the US dollar, I do think a lot of the juice in the FX markets will be in the crosses, you know, because this whole competitive pivot story, you know, things we've talked about in our regular Macro FX podcast as well, Soren, about who cuts first and who cuts more. I think that still remains really important in this quarter, because we've seen the Swiss National Bank already starting to cut rates in March. We are seeing some of the other European central banks. The Riksbank, for example, is signaling a May rate cut. And the European Central Bank as well, even if, you know, it was to kind of start cutting in June, and some of the other central banks, perhaps even the Canadian Central Bank could start cutting in June, all of them in this cycle are potentially cutting ahead of the Fed. So certainly I think there's some room somewhere, at least like I see it in the Canadian dollar side, not so much on the European Central Bank side, but there's room on the Canadian dollar side where the easing is priced in is not enough. So we kind of need to continue to play a catch-up game there, which kind of brings me to the point that there's room for pricing in dovishness in the curve for the Canadian dollar and in the curve for the sterling, so for the Bank of England as well. So there could be some downside risks there. The other thing that I haven't really covered in the outlook, but has become a key story to watch in second quarter lately, is about what happens with the Chinese yuan. So in March, towards the last week or so, we saw the Chinese central bank weakening its grip on the Chinese yuan a little bit. They allowed it for one day, actually, they allowed it to weaken it a little bit, or the midpoint that they set for yuan was a little bit weaker than, you know, what the trend was signaling. And that kind of, again, yes, was a day when volatility really shot up there. And since then, the markets have been testing the trading band of the yuan. So you know, when the Chinese authorities sets a midpoint, the Chinese yuan, the onshore one, is only allowed to trade 2% above or 2% below that midpoint. But the offshore yuan continues to trade more than 2% weaker than that particular midpoint. So there is, it appears that the market is trying to test how much the PBOC is going to continue to hold the Chinese yuan. And if they just let the grip loosen a little bit, I guess the markets would take it a lot further. So there's potential room for weakness there in the Chinese yuan, depending on how the Chinese central bank really responds here.
All right. There you have it. Thank you so much, Charu, for also joining us and letting us in on your takes on the quarterly outlook. I'm sure we will be back soon talking about a lot of good macro and FX stuff. But until that, take care, Charu.
Thank you, Soren.
And then this was the end of our quarterly outlook special here at the Saxo Market Call podcast. I hope it's something that you like. Otherwise, feel free to let us know. But to all of you out there, on behalf of all the participants here, the Saxo Market Call podcast, everybody here at Saxo, my name is Soren Otto. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back anytime soon. But until then, happy trading.